Man, that ball got out of here in a hurry.
Just a bit outside.
You know, anything travels that far ought to have a damn stewardess on it, don't you think?
It's time for Powell at the Park.
One constant through all the years, Ray, has been baseball.
Cubs, Sox, all your Chicago baseball news.
Dynamite drop in money.
Here's your host, Kevin Powell.
Play ball!
Welcome into episode number 11. Already at 11 of the Powell at the Park podcast. I'm Kevin Powell. Thank you for listening. If you haven't already, please subscribe on iTunes, review, and rate. You can also listen on Google Play, WGNRadio.com as well. On this week's episode, I talk with Sam Panayotovich from VSiN, Vegas Stats and Information Network, is really kind of the head and shoulders above pretty much all the gambling media outlets. I think it launched just last year. Brent Musburger's behind it. He hosts a show there, so they do a great job out there in Vegas. It's you know, a lot of the gambling stuff you find online, it's always seems to be like second rate stuff. You go to the websites and it has great gambling insight, but it just feels a little, you know, feels a little backroom sleazy, and it's the design of the website looks like it's from 1998. So this is sort of like, you know, moving forward on the media gambling world of things, and they do a great job. You can stream it on SiriusXM. You can watch it at their website, things like that. So anyway, Sam, who used to work here at WGN for many years in the sports department, works for VSiN now. He moved out there earlier in the year. So anyways, wanted to talk to him about the monumental ruling by the Supreme Court to strike down the federal ban on sports wagering outside of Vegas in the country. A lot to break down there. So we'll talk to Sam. I also talked to NBC Sports Chicago's Vinny Duber. Vinny's a good guy. Gotten to know him over the past year or two, and he covers both teams in town. I seem to see him much more at Sox Park, but Vinny knows his stuff, and we'll have a good conversation about the Sox and Cubs. But we'll start the episode, as we always do, with the rundown. All right, I want to start the rundown. I'll get into this a lot more with Sam later on in the podcast as well. But the ruling from the Supreme Court is to essentially allow all states, if they want, to legalize sports wagering within their boundaries. So I just think that what I'm envisioning, or at least what I hope, and I wish I had money to do this. I wish I was one of those guys that could just, one of these developers with money all the time. But I would just love for like a awesome sports parlor that's like a bar in there, maybe some billiards in the back, basically like a really kick-ass bar with a sports book in it. Like, I hope there are some private companies that are getting ready to actually build something like that. Like a standalone betting parlor that can be a hangout place, you know, like a lounge, a bar. That would be awesome. Like, if you could post up there on like just a great sports weekend, March Madness, of course, so many people go to Vegas for. And by the way, I don't think this is going to hurt Vegas all that much. I think it's like 2% of their bottom line is determined by their sports books. Plus, Vegas is a destination. People want to say, oh, I went to Vegas for March Madness. I went to Vegas for the Super Bowl. It's a trip. It's a destination. They'll be fine. Plus, a lot of the you know, companies that own casinos in Vegas have properties outside of Vegas. Like Caesars has like 15 properties, something like that. So anyways, I do hope that there are some like local angles to it where there are local dollars that are going to go into a specific betting parlor or something like that. But I think in the meantime, we will see, you know, states utilize their racetracks, their casinos, maybe an OTB. Talk about this with Sam in a little later on. You know, my local watering hole where I go, you know, get a few beers with the buddies, has an OTB attached to it, and it is full from the moment there is the first race around the globe, essentially, to the last race of the day. They're always there. These guys are always there. I think a lot of them would love to be able to walk up to one window, bet on a few horses, and then walk to the next window and bet on the Cubs or the White Sox or the Bears, something like that. So I think it's really exciting. I think there's some great possibilities. Hopefully the state of Illinois doesn't screw things up. Probably a good chance they do. But I'll say this about this ruling. I think it's something we'll look back on in 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, and just be like, well, that was so crazy that we weren't allowed to bet on sports. You know, I mean, think of prohibition with liquor. Imagine that now. So it just seems like a no-brainer, kind of makes sense thing. They're going to, you know, make sure this thing's regulated. Everybody's going to want a piece of the pie, so I'm interested to see how that plays out. One other thing I wanted to get to as well is Ben Zobrist, Shoegate. We have Shoegate here in 2018. Ben Zobrist not happy Major League Baseball won't allow him to wear his all-black PF Flyer cleats every so often. They're badass, by the way. Seeing them up close, they're super cool, and I love it. Zobrist has talked about how basically it's a respect thing for players of the past. Guys like Ernie Banks who used to wear those old-school black leather cleats, and Zobrist not happy about it. MLB not happy about it. He got a slap on the wrist. They're going to try to talk this out and come to a solution. You know, I don't think we should like overreact and say the MLB is this big evil empire and that they won't let the players have fun and things like that. You know, this was all bargained for. This isn't the agreement. This is why I never have that much sympathy for the players in certain situations like this. I mean, like, I get it. I hope Zobrist is allowed eventually to wear them. But at the same time, it's like, there is agreement between the players' union and Major League Baseball. It says 51% of your shoe needs to be the primary color of your club. So I see both sides. Hopefully they can come to a solution. You know, let them do it once a month on, like, a Sunday or something like that. But I don't think, I guess this is how everything is now, is you gotta take a side, whether it's with Zobrist or Major League Baseball, you know, because I've seen stuff on Twitter, like, MLB sucks, they're no fun league now, blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, relax a little bit. This is agreed upon. They've got to regulate their uniforms. They don't want things to get crazy. And I totally get where Zobrist is coming from, too. So we'll see how, where that goes. That was this week's rundown. And we get more into the gambling, more into Cubs and Sox. Coming up with Vinny Duber of NBC Sports Chicago and Sam Panayotovich from VSiN. All right, our first guest is Sam Panayotovich from the Vegas Stats and Information Network out in Vegas. You guessed it. Sam's been working there for about half a year now, and he's been covering this Supreme Court ruling about the sports betting and following that closely. Well, and wanted to get his perspective and what are people saying out in Vegas. How are things, man? I haven't really talked to you much since you headed out that way.
Well, it's been pretty crazy. You know, I left in February, like the first 10 days of February, and since then we've been waiting, Kev. We've been waiting for this decision. They thought it would be maybe March, maybe it'd be April. It ends up being May. Supreme Court rules that PASPA is unconstitutional, so now the floodgates open up, and now, you know, sports gambling is going to be legal as far as, you know, on a state-by-state basis. You know, Illinois will be coming up soon. I know that for sure. It's legal in Nevada, of course. New Jersey is going to start taking bets in a couple weeks before the finals. West Virginia right around the corner. Pennsylvania right around the corner. Same with Mississippi. So it's a domino rally, and you're going to start to see a lot of state legislatures really ramp up the activity as far as introducing and passing bills because everybody realizes, hey, we can tax this stuff. We can make money now. Let's get involved.
Yeah, we'll get into all the logistics of it all in just a second, but it's I think the friends out in the desert kind of had a forward step on this whole thing, I'm guessing. VSiN's kind of been all over it, and just talking about what you do there, Sam, it's, you know, the thing, when this whole started, VSiN, you know, it was forward thinking because there was plenty of gambling talk out there on the internet, but it all felt so dated. Like some of these websites you go to, it's like, you know, were designed in the 90s. So, you know, VSiN's been great. You can listen to it on SiriusXM 204. Sam's on that throughout the week. Just talk about the network, Sam, and what it's been like working there and what people can expect to see and hear and read when they turn to VSiN.
It's pretty much sportsbook radio. That's how I would characterize it. We give information. We give trends, odds, matchups, stats. We don't sell picks. Let's get that, you know, out in the open. We don't give, you know, $19.99 a pick. We don't do any of that stuff. We're way above that. We just try and inform the listener and inform the bettor. You know, we had a trend the other day about Las Vegas, the Golden Knights, how when they're at home, they're 33-13 when they're at home at T-Mobile. You know, we try and pump that stuff. My biggest avenue this whole postseason has been the Boston Celtics as a home bet when they're at home. And lo and behold, 9 games this year in the postseason at home, they've won 9 times, and they've covered the spread 9 times. So we try and find angles to tackle. It's pretty much everything you would hear in a sports book or amongst buddies, amongst bookies, conversations you have on who to bet, who not to bet, when to pounce, when not to pounce. So that's really what we do. We're trying to inform, entertain, and educate. I don't know if you heard Steve Kerr the other day before his press conference, football Warriors head coach, said, you know, I take the Warriors tonight, and I'd be careful going against Cleveland tomorrow. You know, so we play bites like that when they involve sports gambling. It's pretty much anything you can hear betting-wise, we talk about it.
Yeah, I like it too because, and I've said this before about people who are really into sports gambling and betting and wagering on sporting events, that even if you're not a gambler, it's a good source just to listen because you guys do try to mine out every little detail involving every player, every team, every league. You guys cover it all, and you guys dig for every bit of information. So I always tell people, even if you're not into the gambling aspect of it, you're still going to learn a whole hell of a lot about the sports world in general.
I also have tried to figure out exactly how to learn more about every sport because I've been, you know, calling college basketball. I played basketball. So basketball has always been easy for me to sort of handicap. But, you know, learning more how to do this baseball on a day-to-day grind. You know, back in Chicago, we had to cover all these teams. You know, you had to cover the Cubs and the White Sox, Blackhawks, Bulls, Bears. And you don't have much time to, you know, dedicate to learning about how they make lines and how lines move and why lines move. You know, we had to do our jobs, and this was sort of a hobby for me. But now it's a full-time job. So I'm learning on the fly as to how to look at a baseball team, you know, when they've won four in a row and then they go on the road and play West, you know, what are the advantages? Are there any advantages with hockey? I wasn't a big hockey fan as far as betting. I still don't really bet it all that much, but I'm learning, you know, I'm trying to round into form as far as all these different sports. And now we've got guys here on staff, Kev, they're doing golf matchups. So they bet like Mickelson against Tiger. You know, you could do that. You could bet on Will Jordan Spieth finish in the top 10. We've got a guy who's hitting like 60% in NASCAR matchups. So it's insane to me all the different ways that people try and make money. And if you talk to the right people and get the right information, you can make money. Let's be serious.
All right, let's talk about the Supreme Court ruling. They strike down the federal ban on sports wagering outside of Vegas, of course. I think a lot of sports gamblers are excited. Mark Cuban tweeted, the Dallas Mavericks owner tweeted the other day that basically if you're an owner of a team, your worth basically just doubled, or at least the value of a team doubled. I think he was probably exaggerating a little bit, but I think it's good news for them. Let's talk about, we'll get into Illinois a little bit too, but the MLB, and I know, were the leagues actually trying to not get this through in the courts? Was that more politics, though? Like, you know, this whole, they all talk about the integrity of, that's kind of the route they have to go, right? They're just saving face, and they couldn't, it would have been a bad look if all these leagues went into the courts and were like, yes, legalize gambling. So if they were, you know, because I read some reports that they were kind of trying to slow this thing down in the courts. Is that accurate? Or was that just politics? Because they're all going to make so much money on this.
They fought this for 30 years. They didn't want it to happen. And then all of a sudden they realized, hey, maybe it works. Maybe we can make money on it. And then they wanted a piece of the pie. It's amazing the way that they've changed their perspective on it. You know, the leagues, you know, 1992 is when PASPA went into effect. So that's, you know, 26 years or so. And Chris Christie and company in New Jersey, Ray Lesniak was a senator. We had him on VSiN actually the other day, talking about how, you know, in 2012 they were on an island. You know, they just wanted to go against, you know, all the leagues. They went against the NBA, the NHL, NFL, MLB, PGA, NCAA. And the leagues all sued the state of New Jersey. So this was a six-year battle. And then once the state of New Jersey got toward the finish line, the leagues came out and said, well, okay, we're okay with it, but we want a piece of the pie, right? Of course you do, because you know it's going to be legalized. You see the success of the Vegas Golden Knights. You see that the Raiders are moving to Vegas. So eventually there will come a time down the road, and that's what all these leagues are realizing. Hey, there's going to come a time where you can bet on the NFL when there's a team in Vegas. So they knew it was inevitable. And once they finally figured that out, hey, buddy, hey, how's it going? Yeah, you guys can come on in. Yeah, we just, you know, we want a piece of that. And the math, I don't know if you heard the math. The math is ridiculous. They wanted 1%. The leagues asked for 1%.
Right.
Of every dollar wagered.
So the integrity fee, they're calling it.
Oh, what a bunch of bunk. You know, I mean, there were 8-9 basketball teams tanking this year. Devin Booker for Phoenix was day-to-day for almost 6 weeks. We didn't know if he was going to play or not. Where's the integrity there? Guys aren't playing on a regular basis. They're taking days off. Coaches are resting players. Where's the integrity there? You know, LeBron James, 2 hours before the game, yeah, he's going to sit out for rest. The spread moved 6 points. So, I mean, where's the integrity there? The math, though, back to the math. They want 1% of every wager. So let's make it $100, right? The league said, all right, we get a dollar of every $100 wager. The problem is, Kevin, of that $100, the sportsbook only nets like $5.
Right. They get 5% rake, essentially, right? For the most part.
It's 20%. It's one of five. It's not one of 100. It's one of five. Because of that 100, the sportsbook only makes five. So it's not one of 100. It's one of five. Because you have to pay staffers. You have to regulate your business. You pay taxes. People actually win money, believe it or not. So you pay out wins. The sportsbook, of $100, they only keep like $5. So that one of 100 is not one of 100, it's one of five. And that's where the leagues are so out of their element here. And that's why all these states are saying, no chance, no way, we're not paying you 1% of the handle. It's impossible.
Yeah, and that's the thing, too. I mean, that integrity fee is going to eat into the sports books, and then the sports book might up that amount, too. And then does that in turn end up, you know, deterring some people from gambling, because part
it
of
it affects the price. What right. It does is, instead of a 10% juice, like when you bet on a football game, you bet 110 to win 100.
Right.
If the sports books have to pay this integrity fee, you're talking about now to bet on the Bears on a Sunday, instead of laying 110 to win 100, now you got to lay 130 to win 100, because the sports books have to find a way to make up this profit that they're now losing because of integrity. So then they tax the hell out of the bettors,
right?
And the juice goes up. And then all of a sudden, the black market, which everybody's trying to chip into, the black market's going to be fine, because the local bookie's not going to change the juice, because he realizes, hey, I've got 110 still. I've got a better price. People are going to keep betting into me. So there are so many questions, man, that have yet to be answered, and now everybody has all these questions, and a lot of them we just don't have answers to.
So what do you think is going to happen with that integrity fee? You think that'll go through?
New Jersey says they're not paying it. They said they're never going to give the leagues a dime. They said that on our station this week. Of course, Vegas doesn't pay an integrity fee, and they're not calling the starts. I saw some legislation in Illinois. Senator Napoleon Harris was suggesting that they do the integrity fee because it'll be good, because the leagues will be in their corner. But I don't know. I mean, you don't have to do it, because the government just told you it's legal now. So you don't really have to pay the integrity
fee. Well, what about,
Jersey says they're not going
to
do it.
What about a scenario where, I mean, this is crazy to think, but, because the teams essentially would be their own sports book. But if they really want money off this, what if they just open up their own betting parlors within their own stadiums and their own ballparks and take their own bets?
That's a possibility. Now, of course, there are so many things to shake out, but if you look at what they do in the United Kingdom, when you go to an EPL game, like an English Premier League soccer game, when you walk in, I've had friends that go to these games, they sit down in their seats, and somebody walks up to them with like a menu of things to bet on. You know, There are kiosks in the concourse. You can put in, you know, put in some euros, and then, you know, on a computer screen, you know, you pop in your bet, and the ticket comes out. So in Europe, you can bet in stadiums. You know, in Australia, you can bet in stadiums. I don't know who owns these, because I'm not close enough to them, but I don't see why in 5 years you can't have a kiosk inside Wrigley Field and take bets on Cubs games, because it's going to make money. Now, I don't know if the Cubs are going to piece of that. I don't know if it's the government or if it's the Ricketts or whatever. There are so many things to be ironed out, but you look at what they do in other countries, man. I mean, America's in the dark age, really, when it comes to this. Live betting, pre-betting, halftime betting, that is all the norm in other countries. And in America, they're just finally getting into it.
Yeah, so this is what I'm really interested, too, is the basic infrastructure of it all. I mean, we talked about putting them in ballparks and stadiums and arenas. Do you see the scenario, I guess, in the short term, they're probably going to be, you know, putting kiosk, you know, racetracks, casinos, of course, and then maybe even like OTBs. You know, my local watering hole, Sam, where I just go get a couple beers with buddies, has an OTB attached to it, and it is packed all of the time. And I got to believe a lot of those guys would love to be able to walk up to one window and place a few bucks on the ponies, and then walk to the other window right next door and place a few bucks on the Cubs or the Sox or the Bears. So in terms of like the actual, like where these kiosks and these betting parlors will actually physically be, because I know there's going to be a digital component to it as well. How do you see that playing out? You see them kind of piggybacking off stuff that's already in place, or do you see like actual just building ground up brick and mortar betting parlors where people can go hang out and place bets?
I think your best bet, you sort of alluded to it, is that the casinos and racetracks will have first dibs because they're already established and there's already a clientele there. Now, there's 10 casinos in Illinois and 5 in Chicagoland. I would imagine they get a first crack along with the racetracks. You still got Hawthorne and Arlington in Chicagoland. So I imagine
those are going to be the places that have first dibs because, like I said, they're already built. They already have gambling there. There's slot machines, at blackjack and poker, and tracks. You could bet on races, of course. So those would be the front runners, of course. But I wouldn't rule out, you know, corporations coming in and hedge fund managers and just saying, hey, you know what, let's pool our money together and let's create a sports book. I think in London alone, there's like 1,200 places where you can make a bet. Those are not all casinos and tracks, right? Those are betting parlors. Those are conglomerates. So while the casinos and racetracks will start first, I think betting parlors will soon pop up. I've had friends in Chicago say, hey, like, what do we do? Like, you want to end? Like, people already ask me if I want to invest with them because they want to open up a sports book. And I'm like, hold on, pump the brakes. Like, I don't know what's going on yet. But everybody is so eager now to get a piece of this because everybody wants to chip into that black market. Chicago is dominated by local bookies.
Yeah.
And last year, the black market, the figures, according to Bloomberg and the New York Post, said that in America, there was $150 billion. Bet illegally. $150 billion, not million, billion with a B. So everybody sees an opportunity to make some money, and you're not only going to have casinos and racetracks, but you'll have big spending individuals, big business guys, corporations. Everybody wants in now.
It's kind of like marijuana and weed, right?
Exactly.
I mean, you see people, there's an arms race to try to get these things popped up and bite into that huge piece of the pie that is there in the betting world. It's going to be really interesting to see how this all plays out. I would love to just see like a really cool, you know, brand new sports book be built here in Chicago somewhere, you know, like a Vegas style where you can go hang out, all the games are on, you can go place your bets, there's a bar, maybe some you know, just like kind of a cool hangout area. But I, you know, I think that's as you said, I think they're probably going to be you know, piggybacking off casinos and racetracks and things like that because they're in place. Let's talk before I let you go. Cubs, Sox. What are Sam from? Are you keeping an eye on the Chicago sports scene out there in Vegas, Sam? What are your thoughts on both clubs this year so far?
I still follow. I still read. I still listen. You know, I'm bouncing around GM, the tour, ESPN.
Powell at the Park podcast. Listening every week, I'm sure, to make sure you're tuned in.
I've got to keep my ears on the ground because I have to understand why my White Sox are only at 10 wins right now. It makes me sick. You know, one of my bets this year when I got here, when they opened up the baseball win totals, they had the White Sox at like 66.5 wins.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked up to the counter and I bet the over. And actually, it closed at 72. So it was a good bet at the time because it moved almost 6 wins.
Wow.
Problem is, as you know, and you're around this team way more than I am, they're not trying to win, and they've got guys in the minors that are ready to play right now that are just, you know, tussling away. You know, Eloy Jimenez could hit fifth on this team right now, and we all know that, but they're slow playing their hand, and that's what you do when you're rebuilding. Now, we know they're trying to get in the top three, top four picks in the draft. Hell, if the season ended today, they'd have the number one pick because they're the worst team in the league. So the White Sox are just slow playing their hand, and it makes sense. You know, if you stick to the rebuilding plan, you don't want to rush, and I understand that. That's all gravy. But the Cubs, People are concerned here about their hitting. Now, there were a lot of bets on the over, which was about 93.5, 94. And the Cubs right now just haven't got it together. I don't know what it is. From the fire, it looks like Yu Darvish has not been as good as advertised. I think you'd rather have Arrieta at this point in time than Darvish. And I don't know that the middle relief is as good as it's been in years past. Not to mention, the offense isn't coming around. As far as I can tell, it's guys like Rizzo not hitting. Addison Russell has regressed again at the plate. So I think the Cubs have the talent to go around. They might have the best talent in the division still, but until you start winning games and pulling away, that division is good, man. St. Louis is a really good team. Milwaukee's good. Pittsburgh is surprising people. So I think the division is tougher than people thought it was going to be. And I don't know that the Cubs have put their best foot forward yet. What do you think?
Well, yeah, I think they're absolutely underperforming right now. I think you mentioned the depth of the division, and that's going to play a factor down the road. We saw it last year. I remember the Cubs playing those high-leverage games in Milwaukee and things like that, and the bullpen was taxed, and then they had to go to St. Louis, and that was a close series, and then that absolutely impacted their postseason. I've said this before that, you know, they basically, it was an impressive, very impressive series win over Washington in the opening series, and everybody somebody looked at how that basically burnt out the bullpen. I'm like, yeah, that was like the exclamation point to burning out the bullpen. The fact that the Cubs put themselves in a spot last year down the stretch to have to play all these important games, that played a factor into the way the bullpen was used in the postseason as well. So they're underperforming. I'm not going to hit the panic button on Darvish. The thing I've said about the Cubs offense before is that they won it, and it's with all that young core. Like, people forget how young they are. You know what I mean? Like, they won the World Series with all these guys in their young 20s. In some ways, like, a lot of these guys are still developing players. So I think that's why we see this streakiness on the offense. You see them put up this raw talent, and they crush the ball, and they, you know, they score 10 runs in a game, and then the next game, they don't have the right approach at the plate, and you have guys learning and adapting at the plate. So I think that's where we've kind of seen the streakiness with this Cubs team. I think they just have so much talent, they're going to win the division. You say 93, 90, 94 is kind of that number. It's going to be close. It's going to be close. But they're going to have to win a lot of games with this division. I don't know if Pittsburgh can play this well for the rest of the season. But, the divisional race is going to impact that team. And they're probably going to have to add another arm. The bullpen's been fine. They're just going to probably have to add another arm because they are going to play in some high-leverage games later in the season. So, before I let you go, though, Sam, what's the line on the Bears? Is Vegas thinking, like, what are their thoughts on Mitch and the boys right now after the draft?
So this is what I was told actually 2 days ago. So the over-under open is 6.5. So you have to win 7 to win that over bet, 7 or more. And if they win 5 or 6, of course you lose because you got to go over 6.5. Vegas opened that number at -120 on the over. So you had to lay 120 to win 100. And right now, the juice is at -140 to go over 6.5. So all they've really done, they haven't moved the number, they've moved the juice. So if you want to bet the over, you're getting taxed an extra 20 cents. Instead of 120 to win 100, you're laying 140 to win 100, which I'm never going to do on a win total because that's too much of a price there. So long story short, Chicago money, the Chicago perspective, and like I said, I've been listening and reading. I know a lot of people have this team for 7-8 wins. I think somebody in that town had it for 9-7, which is a little much, I think, right now. But the professional money is coming in on the under. They just think that Mitchell Trubisky needs a little bit of time. And I know the comparison is there. Look what Jared Goff did in year two. Look what Carson Wentz did in year two. I think talent-based, though, those teams are just much more talented offensively. And I know Trubisky has more weapons now with Robinson and Burton and Gabriel, and you still have Howard and Cohen. Mm-hmm. But it's going to take time for them to gel. And that division, you can make the case they're still the fourth-best team in that division because right. Green Bay still has Aaron Rodgers. The Vikings have the best defense. And I think Matt Patricia is going to really do some good things with that Detroit team. I think capitalize and utilize a lot of things that they have. So those three teams have been together longer. And I think the Bears, well, they could win 7 or 8 games this year. I'm not laying that price. I'll wait and see. I really want to attack them next year. I'm thinking about a ticket on them in 2019 to win the NFC, win the Super Bowl. I think they'll make a bigger jump in year two under Nagy than opposed to year one. Because remember, this is still his first year as a head coach in the NFL. So I'm not too confident yet. The professionals in Vegas are betting under 6.5. And as you know, all the over money is coming from Chicago.
Yeah, it's that classic Chicago Bears optimism from the fan base following the draft. So I do think a lot of good things are in motion at Hallis Hall, and I think they're, as you mentioned, it's still early in Trubisky's career, so we shall see. 6.5, you said, is the over-under right now. He's Sam Panayotovich, VSiN, Vegas Stats and Information Network. When can people watch you, listen to you on Sirius XM 204? When can people tune in to hear Sam Panayotovich?
So I'm on Mondays through Wednesdays from 12 to 3 Pacific, 12 to 3 Pacific time, and then I got the weekends, 11 in the morning to 3 p.m. The show on the weekends is called The Green Zone, which is a lot of fun. We're watching games as they're coming down to the wire. You know, we're watching a basketball game starts at 12:30 that ends about 3, and we're going nuts when buzzer beaters go in and stuff. So during the week, 12 to 3, Monday through Wednesday, and then on Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 3 Pacific.
Awesome. He's Sam Panayotovich. Follow him on Twitter at SPShoot. Appreciate you jumping on, man. I know you got to run, but thanks for bringing some context on the whole new gambling rule and talking some Cubs, Sox, and Bears as well. Thanks for jumping on, man.
Keep holding down the fort, brother.
Working on it. Thank you to Sam Panayotovich. You can follow him on Twitter at SPShoot. Highly recommend you do that. Check out his stuff at VSiN. Up next on the podcast, Vinny Duber from NBC Sports Chicago. Talk a little bit of a whole Chicago baseball scene, including Cubs and White Sox. We even talk about the Robinson Cano suspension as well. Vinny Duber, NBC Sports Chicago. He covers the Cubs and White Sox. He does it well. He's a karaoke singing machine as well, an all-star in that department. Vinny, how you doing, man? Any karaoke lately for you?
Not lately. I'm doing well, but yeah, I haven't gotten back to it. That might be something that I only do within the state borders of Arizona.
Things get a little crazy during out in the desert at times.
crazy, yeah.
All right, let's start with the White Sox here. You know, I was tweeting about it the other night. I wrote about it. That the good news here is, as disastrous as, for the most part, this season has been in terms of wins and losses, I mean, we knew going in they weren't going to win a whole lot of games. It was all about individual growth. But it's been pretty ugly. It's been a pretty bad product. You know, I've been telling Sox fans the good news is that this is probably the bottom of the barrel. It's only going to get better from here. Do you think that's accurate? I mean, I'm not misguided here, am I? I don't really see this getting any worse because the reinforcements are coming, whether it's from your own farm system and then at free agency this upcoming offseason.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think also, too, you know, nowhere to go but up from when you got the last record in baseball, the worst record in baseball, right? So, yeah, I mean, it's going to get better, obviously. You knew the job was dangerous when you took it with this season. You knew that it was going to be short on wins. You knew that you were going to be looking for silver linings kind of every day. And those have existed. I mean, Yoan Moncada has been tearing the cover off the ball when he's been healthy and on the field. You know, you've got Reynaldo Lopez, who, despite a real bad start in Pittsburgh, has been pretty darn good all year long. You know, you got guys like Tim Anderson and Matt Davidson who are maybe carving out future roles on this team. So the silver linings have been there, and yeah, there's really nowhere to go but up. You mentioned the reinforcements coming. You know, it might not be today, which White Sox fans would like to see some of those prospects up as soon as possible, but before the year's over, you're definitely going to see some new faces.
Among some of these young guys that do matter for the future, I guess Lopez, Fulmer, and Giolito, who's impressed you the most so far?
Well, of those three guys, it's definitely Reynaldo Lopez. You know, he hasn't really allowed much outside of a couple of starts. I mentioned that one bad one he had in Pittsburgh, but other than that, he's been pretty darn impressive. Even if he's not keeping guys off base, he's keeping them from crossing home plate, and that's really the number one job when you're a pitcher. Poor Lucas Giolito, man. I mean, we were expecting big things out of him from what we saw at the end of last season, from what we saw in spring training, and he's really struggled with his command. He's just walking a lot of guys. You saw it in the Crosstown series when he walked seven guys. Still got a win in that game, so I guess there's your silver lining there. But guys like Giolito and Fulmer have struggled, and you know what? They're not finished products yet. These are the growing pains that come with development, and that's what we knew this season was going to be about. Rick Hahn has been saying since the offseason that this is kind of the hardest part of this rebuilding process, is sitting here and waiting for these guys to turn into the players that you hope they're going to turn into, and that's what we're seeing on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's interesting with Lopez, because among those three guys, Fulmer, Giolito, and Lopez, you know, a lot of scouts, a lot of baseball people didn't necessarily project him moving forward to be a top-of-the-line rotation guy, and I'm not saying he is, but it's I don't know if I'm surprised to see it, but I think Fulmer and Giolito, we all kind of anticipated those guys have a higher upside with maybe some better stuff, but I guess what do you think's been working for Lopez? Why has he been able to be so successful over the past first couple months here this season?
Yeah, I think, you know, I touched on it. I think it's getting out of jams, right? I mean, you've seen him put some guys on base in a lot of his starts, but maybe they haven't gotten all the way around and put the damage up on the scoreboard. You know, that's the number one job of a pitcher, is to prevent the other team from scoring runs, and no matter how you do it, if you can do it successfully, then you're going to have a future. I think that rotation of the future, a lot of people were penciling in the Giolitos, the Kopechs, the Hansons, and, you know, they've got a lot of pitching prospects. They got a lot of young guys. But remember, Reynaldo Lopez was as big a part of that Adam Eaton trade as anybody. Mm-hmm. Giolito obviously had the hype, but Reynaldo Lopez was a top-rated guy as well. And to see him be able to do this, be able to maybe carve out a spot in that future rotation, which has a lot of guys gunning for five spots, you know, you got to be very impressed by what he's done.
This has become a mandatory question on the podcast every single week, Vinny, and that's, when do you think Michael Kopech and Eloy Jimenez will be called up to the big league club?
Wow, I haven't heard that one before,
I know.
Kevin. That's a first. Listen, White Sox fans obviously would like those guys to be here what, month and a half ago, right? But, you know, there's no rush. This team was never going to be contending for a playoff spot or a division title, and certainly after the start they've had, that's going to be true for the rest of the year. Bringing Michael Kopech up to make a last-place team a little bit better doesn't make any sense. Bring him up early, I should say. You know, they're going to wait and see, make sure he gets all those boxes checked at the AAA level. I mean, you know, he'll throw up those box scores and people will see him and they'll be like, this guy should have been here, you know, a year ago with all the guys he's striking out. But it's not all in those box scores, as Rick Hahn has said. There are other things that they're looking to make sure everything they want to see from the AAA level is done. And then he can come up to the major league level. And you know what? Maybe that's not until June or July or August. Look at last year, what happened with Yoan Moncada. He was the number one prospect in baseball, and he was putting up some real good numbers at AAA, and they didn't just bring him up in May because he was doing well in AAA. They waited to make sure that he checked all those boxes, and I think that's what you're going to see with Kopech. On to Jimenez, maybe the season runs out and he's not here yet. You know what I mean? I mean, this is a guy who hasn't really played that much AA baseball yet, and obviously he is doing great things from a statistics perspective down there. But, you know, there are other boxes that they want to see checked there, and then they want him to play in AAA and get more experience with a different kind of pitcher, pitchers who are going to attack him in a different way at the AAA level. So there's no rush to get these guys to the big leagues, even though everybody wants to see them. So just let them develop. Play that waiting game as hard as it might be.
One of the names we've been hearing bounce around the baseball world over the past week or so is Manny Machado of the Orioles. The reason we've been hearing a lot about him here in Chicago is because there was some rumors and speculation maybe the Cubs could go for him as a rental player. And, you know, Addison Russell's name comes up, Kyle Schwarber's name comes up, but we've heard Theo Epstein say they don't want to have to pay a premium for a rental player. And then, of course, White Sox fans have been salivating at the mouth, dreaming of a lineup with Moncada, Machado, and Jimenez some point down the road. So he's obviously been on the radar for Sox fans and now Cub fans, too. I think Cub fans are starting to be like, okay, well, this would be incredible. So I guess, is there, if you had a bet, would you say Machado lands with the Cubs as a rental or with the Sox down the road or maybe with both as a Cubs a rental with the Cubs and then signing with the Sox in the offseason?
I think I'm going to go off the board and say he probably won't play for either Chicago team, and I know that might be disappointing to a lot of folks out there. But you never know. I think the point is that Manny Machado is going somewhere before the season is over.
So you don't think the Sox will get him in the offseason? You don't think they could win the sweepstakes?
I think they'll make a run at him, but I think he's going to command an awful lot of money. I mean, one of the biggest contracts ever you're going to see. I mean, with his age and his production, and a lot of teams, all teams are going to be in the bidding for this crazy offseason full of, you know, the top players in baseball, Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, maybe you got Clayton Kershaw out there. I mean, you're talking about an all-star team of free agents. So, yeah, I think they'll make a run at him. I don't know if they can bid against the Yankees or other teams like that. We'll have to wait and see.
Should Cub fans be panicking about Yu Darvish? It seems like they're already panicking, and I've sort of tried to, you know, temper the fear a little bit. I think he has a large enough body of work where we can point to certain things in his splits and say, okay, I think he'll be okay, but it's just pretty much about as bad of a start as you could have drawn up for Darvish in Chicago.
Yeah, it's been unfortunate. I think you, in the end, you got to look to the track record. You know what I mean? I mean, even last year, you know, glaring problems there in the World Series aside, he was putting up, you know, regular Yu Darvish type numbers. And the track record is just too good to think that this is going to be the Yu Darvish we see on the north side for the rest of the season or the rest of that contract or however long a time period you want to put on it. But No, I mean, I wouldn't panic. I would be, you know, concerned that this is what he's done the first month and a half of the season. But I think you got to look to what he's done in the past and be like, you know what, this is a guy who's been one of the best pitchers in baseball in recent years. I don't think that just turns off. You know, he's got to come around at some point here. I think any worries over Jose Quintana, I'd probably have the same answer. It's a long season, and we saw last year when guys got off to poor starts with the Cubs, pitchers getting off to poor starts, and by the time that All-Star break came and went, they were a completely different team. So, you know, I really think that the start that the Cubs have had and some of those players in particular – give it time. Let's see if the stretch is deep into the summer. Then obviously, yes, we have cause for concern. But right now, I think you got to look to the track record of what both Darvish and Quintana have done over the course of their careers and be like, you know what? I think we're going to get that guy eventually. Mm-hmm.
Vinny, as we speak here today, the NL Central, four teams separated by just a game through 40 games so far, roughly 40 games. Pittsburgh, Milwaukee, the Cubs, and St. Louis. It's a deep division this year. Who do you think is the biggest threat to the Cubs to winning the Central?
I would go with the Cardinals. Cardinals have been really impressive, and you know, they got that big offseason acquisition in Ozuna, and he really hasn't been the guy they thought he was going to be for the bulk of 2018 so far. So once he turns it on, they've got a huge bat in the middle of that lineup, and then, you know, everybody else doing their typical Cardinal thing around him, right? So, you know, I mean, that's a team that, for, you know, to their credit, always seems to be in it. And with the Cubs, you know, Cubs-Cardinals, it goes back a long ways. The Brewers have a lot of injuries. The Brewers have had some trouble with the Cubs this year. So I think the Cardinals are the team that the Cubs have to be worried about contending with the most.
Hey, last question before I let you go, Vinny. Outside of the Cubs and the Sox, one of the baseball's great players got popped for 80 games, violating the MLB drug policy, in Robinson Cano. And I'm sure you saw that. It just seemed like we had finally kind of turned a corner, and you hadn't really seen stuff like this among the great players in baseball. And I know, of course, you know, Cano immediately went to his own defense, saying, "Oh, he wasn't using the drugs for performance enhancing reasons." Yada yada yada. Frank Thomas went on a huge rant on, I think it was MLB Network, about it. It's frustrating. For me, the very first thing I thought of was, you know, this image of Cano talking with Yoan Moncada at 35th and Shields earlier this year. It was like, you know, people dream of the day Moncada could maybe be like a Cano-type player at second base. It's just kind of almost devastating. It's like, damn it, why do they continue to do this? Despite Cano getting a $240 million contract, whatever it was, just a few years ago, he's still dabbling in this, and there are still players obviously using it. I guess your thoughts on the whole matter, and I guess just steroid use in general in baseball, are they doing enough, or does it need to be even more severe, the punishments?
Yeah, I'll certainly say it's a bummer to see a guy as great as Cano thrown into that mix. You know, I think it was just a few weeks back, maybe when the Mariners were in town, that, you know, someone in the press box just throws out as a conversation topic, do we think Cano's a Hall of Famer? And, you know, for me, the first thing was, yeah, of course he is. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that is going to have a wrench thrown in it at this point. But, you know, growing up in the 90s, when all of that, all those home runs were going out of the park and everything, I tend to not have as strong a stance on the whole steroid thing as maybe some people who are in generations ahead of me. I loved watching Sammy Sosa and Mark McGwire do their thing, you know, and certainly the players and former players have very good reason to be upset when this kind of thing happens. And certainly they are the ones whose opinion, you know, that we should be acknowledging, because they're the ones who are, you got guys who are doing it the right way and guys who are circumventing the rules in certain situations. So I've never been one to, you know, really get really mad over steroid use. But at the same time, when you see a guy like a Verlander or Frank Thomas or whoever else goes out and shows their rage over the matter, you kind of get a different opinion. You get a different perspective from guys who have done things, you know, without the help of steroids. So it's an interesting topic, you know, and it is a bummer to see an all-time great, really, in Cano thrown into a group of guys who are being viewed as tainted.
He's Vinny Duber. You can read his stuff at NBCSportsChicago.com covering the Cubs and the White Sox. Vinny, thanks a bunch for jumping on, and I'll see you in the press box soon. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks so much. It was good.
That's going to do it for episode number 11 of the Powell at the Park podcast. I'm Kevin Powell. Thank you again for tuning in. Please follow me on Twitter at KPowell720. If you haven't already, please subscribe to the podcast on iTunes as well. Thanks to Sam Panayotovich from VSiN talking about the new sports gambling laws in America. Thanks to Vinny Duber from NBC Sports Chicago. Appreciate him jumping on. Thanks a bunch, and hope you can join us for episode number 12. I've got some cool things in the works for the podcast, so stay tuned for that. More to come. Kevin Powell, thank you for listening. Have a great day.